Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. It's 67 years since the first ever strike by Aborigines working in virtual slavery on sheep farms in Australia. Claire Bowes has been listening to some of the strikers, recorded by the filmmaker David Noakes in the 1980s. All of those featured are now deceased.
It's 1942, Australia. 200 Aboriginals from the west of the country are making their way over hundreds of kilometres of dusty red land to an historic meeting in the desert. Among them is one white man, Don McLeod.
They'd been at me to act as their spokesman and representative, and it took 5 years before the blackfellow satisfied me that they had a safe place where we could examine the situation carefully. And when I'd satisfied myself that this, I kept an invitation to go to a place called Skull Springs.
Skull Springs had been the site of a massacre of Aboriginals, who refer to themselves as blackfellows, by white Europeans in the 19th century. Now it was to witness the start of an important new chapter in relations between the two. At this time, Aborigines did not have Australian citizenship. Instead, they were regarded as part of the country's flora and fauna, and their lives were regulated by white people. But they trusted Don McLeod to represent them.
And I was terrified to do it because I wouldn't have been a kick of peace amongst these slave owners up in the north because they were absolute masters of their situation.
Those masters were the white men who ran the prosperous sheep stations of Australia, where a quarter of the world's wool was produced. The country's leading industry relied almost entirely on Aboriginal workers in slave-like conditions. They lived in camps and it was illegal to leave, as one worker, Sam Coppin, described.
$4 a fortnight, that's all we get. We've got to pay for the boots with that same money, shirt and trousers, tobacco, matches. We're in debt all year round. Never get off the debt. That's the way, keep us there all the time. Man want to go away, get the police, fetch him back because you hold too much in the station. You can't live.
At Skull Springs, the Aboriginal tribes met to discuss these wrongs and, for the first time in their history, to plan industrial action.
Now, this meeting was like a small United Nations. We had 23 languages, we had 16 interpreters. We had two men and three men from each of the various tribes from as far away as Alice Springs and Darwin. So I can assure you there was a lot to say and it took a long time to say it, but after 6 weeks, everybody was satisfied they knew what they had to do.
What they decided to do was to go on strike to demand better wages and conditions. But, fearing public criticism, they waited until the Second World War was over before beginning. And so, it was in 1946 that two Aboriginal leaders, Dooley Binbin and Clancy McKenna, travelled hundreds of kilometres to all the sheep stations in the northwest of Australia to spread the word.
Clancy and Dooley and Don McLeod walked by the whirlies when the wind was loud. And their voice was new as the fresh sap running. And we keep on fighting and we keep on coming. Don McLeod.
None of the workers could read or write, so they gave them calendars marked out on food tin labels and instructed them to mark off the days until the 1st of May, which was International Workers' Day, and the beginning of the sheep shearing season.
And the working men all over the land heard what they shouted and shook their hand. The sheep's wool dragged and the squatters swore.
When the big day came, 800 workers from the Pilbara region walked out. Crow Yugala was one of them. Here, in David Noakes' documentary film, Crow describes an exchange with the sheep station manager that day, referred to by the Aborigines as squatters.
We say, we're not going back to work. Squatter bloke say, right then, it's up to you. Next morning, policeman was coming. And we say, we finish.
The families left their homes at the sheep stations and went to live in two big strike camps. But the police maintained a constant presence nearby. Don McLeod remembers secretly meeting strike leader Clancy McKenna in the nearby mangroves to discuss tactics.
He stood over 6 foot, 6 foot two or three. He was a fearless sort of a big half-caste bloke. And we'd be going up along the edge of the mangroves and keeping down low because the coppers were on the skyline. Clancy, I'd say, for Christ's sake, shut up. And he'd be squashing bloody great big rusty petrol tins with his big feet. The coppers are hearing the noise and flashing the torches. And, of course, the mangrove leaves are very dry and brittle, and they make a hell of a rattle when you walk on them. But we'd go through all this with a bit of heart failure. And we'd lay on our belly and discuss these problems so we wouldn't be visible from the skyline.
The biggest problem the strikers had was food. In the post-war years, every Australian was entitled to rations. The coupons were sent direct to the sheep stations, but when the workers tried to claim theirs, the owners refused to hand them over.
So they come down to me, and I took a deputation up to the police. It was an example of how contemptuous they were, the blackfellas. First of all, I reckon they weren't entitled to them. Then they said coupons had been issued to the stations and they'd bought the ration goods. And when that didn't work, they still wanted them. They arrested me under Section 37, I think it is. Well, they put me in jail and they all went down and they blamed themselves for having me arrested. So they took their hats and coats off and marched up to town. Despite the fact that they were terrified, they come up to tear the jail to pieces.
400 strikers marched into the town of Port Hedland, where Don McLeod was being held in jail.
Don McLeod beat at a mulgabush, and a lot of queer things came out in a rush. Like mongrel dogs with their flattened tail, they sneaked him off to the Hedland jail. The young men marched down the road like thunder, kicked up the dust and patted it under. They marched into town like a whirlwind cloud. Open up the jail and let out Don McLeod.
Yes, it's interesting to watch the reaction of the townspeople when the blackfellas come walking up the street, because they outnumbered the townspeople 4-1. There was only 150 people in Port Hill in those days. So that and a few other things demonstrated to them the power that a group of people organised together and acting together, the amount of power they have.
And as the months turned to years, that unity and independence grew as they began mining and selling kangaroo skins to earn money. By April 1949, with the prospect of a third year of disruption to the shearing season, tensions were running high. The strikers went further afield to encourage more of their people to take action. But on arrival at the sheep stations, they were immediately arrested, as Bill Marnie remembered.
Policeman come and asked us, who are the boss in this mob? We said, no one boss in here, all the same.
Because no single leader would come forward, the whole group would be arrested. But as Don McLeod recalled, they no longer feared being jailed.
Dooley said to O'Neill, Inspector O'Neill of Native Affairs, how many more jails would the old North West hold, Mr. O'Neill, Inspector? And he said, oh, about 100. He said, all right, we'll have them for you in 14 days. So from then on, they didn't bother arrest any more blackfellas because they had too good a time in jail. When they want tobacco, they're given tobacco to shut them up. And they could realise there was no point in putting him in jail any longer.
By August 1949, two sheep stations capitulated and offered better wages and conditions, although nothing like the wages received by white workers. Meanwhile, the strikers convinced the Seamen's Union to ban the shipment of wool from the remaining stations in the northwest. Soon after, a government representative told Don McLeod that the strikers' demands would be met across the region.
Our voice is the lightning all over the land, and we clench up our fists on the sweat of our hands, for the voice of the workers is thundering loud. Fight with Clancy and Dooley and Don McLeod.
But the government's promise for universal higher wages wasn't kept. Many workers never returned to station. Instead, some strikers ended up setting up their own cooperatives. Aboriginals had to wait until 1968 for the right to vote and for equal wages.
Witness was written and presented by Claire Bowes. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.